Despite the summer months, it is a busy time for Congress with regular business, an election year, a global pandemic, and a national reckoning on race. How does a legislator focus? And what's the balance between representing a district and the country? We end the show today with Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, who represents Massachusetts' 7th District, and says the needs of her district vividly mirror the needs of the nation in this moment. Congresswoman, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be with you, Tiziana. Thank you.
We talked to you last, really quite close to the beginning of this pandemic. It's a few months later. We are in the throes. 3.5 million cases, 138,000 deaths in our country, millions unemployed and struggling. And we are in this reckoning about systemic racism at the same time. How are you holding this whole picture in your head at once?
Well, again, the Massachusetts 7th, the inequities and disparities that are so entrenched and have been laid to bear and exacerbated in the midst of this pandemic within a pandemic, a crisis within a crisis, are not new. They informed my run for the seat and really just bear out what the impacts of structural racism are and intersectional legislated oppression. And so the Massachusetts 7th is certainly no anomaly when it comes to these inequities and disparities across every issue. We're in a 3-mile radius. Life expectancy drops by 30 years and median household income by $50,000. I also represent the district that has been hardest hit by the coronavirus. And it's also the most diverse, 53% people of color, 40% foreign born. And so my district perfectly encapsulates the challenges that we are being confronted by the hour. And it's incumbent upon me to legislate in a way that meets the moment, the gravity and scale of the hurt, and does it in an intersectional way.
You have been clear about your agenda since you took office. Throughout your first term here, you've received pushback from different parts of the country. Based on what you just said, is this a moment where you believe there's a broader spectrum of the country that will understand your agenda and see it as their own or recognize it in their own experience?
Well, given the national reckoning that is taking place, this multi-generational, multi-racial, sustained movement, this is not my agenda alone. This is a powerful movement, and it is representative of the hurts, but also the vision for a more equitable and just world that many have. So I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged by the sustainability of the movement. I'm encouraged by this moment of reckoning. And I want to continue to legislate to meet the moment. If you believe that Black lives matter, then the receipts that matter most are how we legislate and also how we codify that in our budgets, because the hurt that has been disproportionately foisted onto Black Americans since the very inception of this country, from enslavement, the original sin, to Jim Crow, to redlining, to the failed war on drugs, was very precise. So we must be precise and prescriptive in the same way that hurt and harm were precise. We must be precise and prescriptive in legislating healing and justice. And so if Black lives matter, then Black data matters. And that's why I've continued to push for the collection and disaggregation of racial data and the public reporting of it in the midst of this pandemic to ensure an equitable public health response.
Let's talk about that. You and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren wrote a letter to HHS Secretary Alex Azar, Health and Human Services. You were requesting a report that details the administration's response to the racial disparities we've seen as a result of the outbreak. And you note that the administration has failed to submit reports that were due in 2017 and 2019 as a result of the Affordable Care Act that would have also been on racial disparities in healthcare. You suggested that failure to do that reporting and have the eye on the ball in the 2017 and 2019 report contributed to the poor federal response here. Can you walk us through that a little more? And what do you hope to get from the information you're requesting?
Well, again, we knew anecdotally that Black and Latinx communities would be hit hardest given decades of unequal access to healthcare, and again, the comorbidities of structural racism, transportation deserts, food apartheid systems, and dominating the essential workforces. So our exposure rates are higher, and then we represent higher infection rates, and sadly, higher fatalities as well. So we knew anecdotally what would happen. History has shown us that in the face of a public health crisis, Black and Brown communities disproportionately suffer, and this pandemic was no exception. So from the onset, Senator Warren and I led calls to collect and report this demographic data to guide our policymaking and to ensure an equitable response. And that law, our Equitable Data Collection Act, was included, parts of it, into the CARES Act. And that's a congressional mandate, right? And yet and still, with that mandate, we see this administration has failed to provide Congress and the public with these reports. So Senator Warren and I wrote to HHS, Health and Human Services this week demanding an update. And instead of increasing transparency, this administration has chosen to reroute important COVID-19 data like racial disparities from the CDC's public database to a private portal operated by political appointees at HHS. This is another demonstration of them politicizing a pandemic. And it's just shameful.
What about the possibility that streamlining that data to HHS, and I understand streamlining is a loaded word, so let's say directing the data to HHS might be a better way to streamline the data, to make it easier to get information. Is that possible? Do we know why the administration is redirecting that data?
No, this isn't the time to be changing the algorithms of how data is reported. We're in the midst of a pandemic, one that we began from behind. We started from a position of being behind, which has everything to do with the science denials, press briefings that function like disinformation campaigns, and the criminal negligence of this administration, which persists. So this latest effort to obstruct transparency is just another shameful attempt by this administration to keep the American people in the dark, hide its incompetence, to further politicize this pandemic. It is dangerous. And it will only result in putting more lives at risk. And there must be accountability.
We've been talking.
So I'm grateful I serve on oversight and reform so I can continue to hold this administration accountable.
We've been talking about data on racial disparities. We've been talking about the flow of the data. Is there any data that you think our country is doing a good job at collecting and staying aware of right now when it comes to the pandemic?
Well, I will just say that Massachusetts was a leader in this regard. We were the first state to do contact tracing, but and also one of the first three to collect racial data, and that's how we could sound the alarm early on about what was happening in Chelsea. Again, I represent the most hardest hit district in the Commonwealth, Chelsea with the highest rates of infection per capita, Randolph, neighborhoods in Boston like Roxbury, Mattapan, and Dorchester, and you know, might I add, these are the communities that I'm in conversation with right now as we begin to talk about school reopenings. And these communities that have been disproportionately the hardest hit, they are very fearful. So I'll just, you know, leave that there.
And I do, in just a moment, I do actually want to talk more about schools reopening. I want to talk about Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, and a couple other things. Before we go there, we had Congressman Richard Neal on the show yesterday. I was talking with him about the CARES Act and the HEROES Act. The CARES Act, the concern predominantly we were discussing is making sure that the $600 a week in extra unemployment is extended beyond July 31st, and also some of the provision in the HEROES Act around extra stimulus payments to families, aid to cities and towns. He expressed some optimism that the two sides of Congress and the administration were going to be able to get together and get something passed and get it passed in time. Do you share that optimism? And if so, what's the most important aspect to make sure gets done?
It's all important, you know, because given the gravity and scale and the depth of the hurt, no one has been untouched. And so therefore, we cannot leave anyone any individual, any family, any workforce, any community behind. And so we have to tackle everything. You know, one of the things that I fought for to be included in the HEROES Act is an essential workers' bill of rights. And of course, we see in the states that are experiencing surges right now that a huge contributor are our essential workers, which means we are not protecting them. They need hazard pay. They need paid family leave, paid sick leave. They need to be working at a living wage in addition to hazard pay. They need funding for childcare. We need to cancel student debt. That's critical to our economic recovery. And we need to provide families to mitigate some of the financial hardship and hurt with those reoccurring payments. And our states and municipalities need a massive infusion of federal funds. So all of it needs to take place. I'll say that I'm encouraged by the fact that this Democratic majority-led House has reported out multiple relief bills that have been bipartisan. And that has included everything from free lunch to student debt cancellation, to paid family leave. And these are things that previously were non-negotiables. They were non-starters. But again, this pandemic has caused unprecedented hurt, and it is requiring unprecedented leadership. And I do think in the absence of the federal, of the Trump administration, that Congress must lead and act as the conscience of our nation.
They are. Everything you listed is important, and there's so much need. An outside observer of Congress would be forgiven to be concerned that it's going to be really hard for the House, the Senate, and the Trump administration to come together on a package that everybody's going to sign off on. Can you give me any more clarity about where the most likely grounds for bipartisan agreement on spending are that can get passed quickly and back out to the people in the short term?
You know, the reason why that's challenging is because, you know, as you see this week, we were able to get the Trump administration to reverse their decision to deport international students. You know, that was not anything that we would have predicted, but we organized, we mobilized, there was public outcry, and they reversed their position. The same was true when they terminated their medical deferment policy and were going to deport chronically and terminally ill immigrant children. We were able to get them to reverse that policy. So, you know, to me, this is about public pressure. I know that since this pandemic has been politicized, that we have seen from those red states mobilization efforts to that GOP-led Senate from those governors and those mayors saying, you need to pass the HEROES Act because we need this aid. Otherwise, you are going to contribute considerably to the hurt because we will have to lay people off. So I think that is one issue that we can be especially optimistic about.
And just for our listeners' sake, the first thing you were referring to there was ICE saying that international students who were attending schools that were going to be entirely online, colleges and universities, were not going to be able to come into the country. And then they backed down off that policy after being sued about it. I want to go back to schools. You mentioned it before. You made headlines this week for your comments slamming Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, who's backing President Trump's demand to reopen schools this fall. Let's listen to DeVos for a second on CNN. And talking about that.
What we're saying is that kids need to be back in school and that school leaders across the country need to be making plans to do just that. There's going to be the exception to the rule, but the rule should be that kids go back to school this fall. And where there are little flare-ups or hotspots, that can be dealt with on a school-by-school or a case-by-case basis.
You responded in a tweet, and in part, that tweet said, "You have no plan." And it went on to say, "I wouldn't trust you to care for a house plant, let alone my child." Is that hyperbole, or do you have that little faith in the Department of Education and this administration's ability to guide the country and school reopening in this pandemic?
I have that little faith, but that's not a deficit of trust that I monopolize. It's informed by the conversations that I have with superintendents, with families, and with students every day. So I said what so many people feel, and my position on this is guided by what I've heard from them, from the educators and families on the ground. And again, they have politicized, the Trump administration has politicized this pandemic, and their rush to to reopen states, to be the most irresponsible of pace setters in that way, which has now resulted in surges of the coronavirus, of infection rates and fatalities, is the same reason why they're rushing to reopen schools. They politicize this pandemic and they want to present a return to normalcy as much as possible. But my district, the Massachusetts 7th, includes many of the hardest hit communities, cities like Chelsea and Randolph, two cities that were the hardest hit in the entire Commonwealth. And again, my team and I, we speak regularly to students and educators and superintendents throughout my district, and their fear and trauma is real. We just cannot rush this, Tiziana. The consequences are unbearable. Our schools don't have the resources. They don't have the PPE. They may not even have the staff and space to physically distance students in the classroom in compliance with the safety guidelines that were set out by the CDC. So it's placing our educators and our administrators in an impossible position. A teacher said to me the other day, every situation is a bad one, and that is because of the failed leadership of this Trump administration.
So let's talk about, just in our last minute or so, how about at the Commonwealth level, where schools are being asked to wait until August to release their final plans? They're being asked to prepare for a range of possibilities, all online, hybrid, in person. Are you comfortable with where we are in the Commonwealth around our schools?
I'm in regular communication with the commissioner and the governor's office. We all have to do more. We have to stand in the gap when you have an administration that says we're the backstop. Again, we started this pandemic from behind. So we have the Trump administration playing politics with our students, with our children's lives, with our educators' lives, and their families too. We're now expecting them to serve as caseworkers as well as educators throughout this crisis. So yes, the state has got to stand up, particularly in the absence of this federal government.
Well, we are out of time, and I'm sorry about it, because there's so much more to talk with you. I hope you'll come back on again soon, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley. Great.
Thank you so much.